Yeah, we had a group, three of us, an American assistant and a Belgian commercial attaché, I think he probably was something else, mm-hmm. and myself, and whenever we could, we would get together, mainly at parties, in a corner and compare notes, and it was not on the military situation, it was on the political situation. And I think the three of us got on together very well. Each of us found that the other two were very helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, one time, one of them said, look it, they say 3% of the population are communists. Now, let's each go away, break it down, as to who they are, and that's the next time we meet, we'll compare notes, you see. And we each did, for example, and when you start going through, you say, well, all right, army officers, high school teachers, professors, you see, and so on, start looking up all the statistics you have to try and justify the 3%, you see. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely astounding how we all came up with almost identically the same number and the same group of people. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a simple sort of a thing, but we had a lot of more complicated things that we talked about, which were not the military problems. They were the overall problems that were affecting people who were wondering how and where the country was going in many respects.
So this is a perfect example of analysis coming from very innocuous information. I mean, simple statistics coming from the government.
Yes.
How important that was.
Yes.
Well, could you get really accurate statistics from the government?
Well, on many things like that, we thought we could. For example, the school teachers and the professors and things like that, you could get the figures on those. Mm-hmm. And then you could work out the number of collectives and things like that, each one of which had to have one communist in them, running the place, that kind mm-hmm. of thing, the secretary. And then the... We eventually had to, each one of us, eliminate a lot of people that we had originally thought would be Communist Party members, because it was just going to make too darn many people. Mm-hmm. So we had to eliminate people like policemen. We thought all policemen probably would be. Eventually had to come to the conclusion it was only going to be police officers who mm-hmm. were in
charge. In other words, professional classes of people.
Yes, the professional class only. And... then too, we had to take into account on that one question the Young Communist League, mm-hmm. People who were up and coming and hoping to become party members, and who were really in the trial and error stage, and I think a lot of those were used in minor jobs, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But it was just an example of how we used to work on problems then. Get together and talk about them afterwards.
Well, why would you only do it at parties? Why would you only do it at parties?
The only time we ever saw each other, I don't know.
It wasn't the case that you'd get together for a coffee one of the
other No, we didn't do that. No. We saw each other often enough at parties that was, there were times and even months you didn't see the other fellow.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this Belgian chap. Was he a member of their foreign intelligence service? You sort of intimated that.
I think so. As a commercial attaché, he was interested in an awful lot more than what most commercial attachés are interested in.
Well, did the Belgians have other attachés?
No.
That was probably the reason. Yeah, he was sort of the all-end-all for...
Yeah, could have been. Now, the papal nuncio was a great source of information, but he was kicked out. And, he's the equivalent of an ambassador, whatever it's called.
From the Vatican.
From the Vatican, yeah. And...
Was Tito in Yugoslavia a very atheist state?
Oh, yes. You couldn't be a communist and have any religion, you see.
That'd be still good.
I don't see why not. Looks odd.
Well, they were, and of course the papal nuncio was a great source of information on how the churches were being persecuted and so on. Mm-hmm. I didn't get all that much from him directly, although I thought he was a very good fellow. We had a Roman Catholic in our embassy, the third secretary, mm-hmm. who would go and ask him anything I wanted to know, and usually find out. But he had a steady stream of information from this fellow.
Can I ask you a question about that? I know it's sort of off track, but they're trying to promote unity, or they were in Yugoslavia, and wouldn't they be breaking down unity by destroying the church, because the people of the Balkans tended to be, Eastern Orthodox?
Well,
people like that, the peasants, have a strong tie to the church, and you're sort of working against yourself doing that. Were they really hard line against it?
Oh, yeah, very hard line. All of them.
Destruction of churches, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. During the war, they particularly sought out, the partisans particularly sought out churches and riddled them with bullets all through the south. You couldn't see a monastery or a Muslim mosque or anything that wasn't riddled with bullets. They would, the partisans would say, well, there's a Chetnik hiding out in it, so we're going to shoot him out of there. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any Chetnik there at all.
What was a Chetnik?
Well, he was the Mihailovich formed an underground when Yugoslavia was first overrun. Mm-hmm. Now, Mihailovich was a colonel in the Yugoslav army in the royalist days. That's up until the war started, mm-hmm. until Germany invaded. And Mihailovich was the colonel in charge of running the underground once the country was overrun. I mean, those European countries have those kind of things, you see. And he was in charge of that, and he had agents and an organization which existed throughout the whole country. And it was just for that purpose, to run an underground after the country was overrun. Well, the day after they were invaded, his organization sprang into action, and they were called the Chetniks. Mm-hmm. And
why?
I don't remember what Chetnik means. It means something like, freedom fighters or something like that. And they were trying to do what they could to stop the Russians, I mean the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And
fighting under the for the king,
for
the royal government. Yeah,
that's right. And that went on fairly satisfactorily. I mean, the organization didn't make any great mistakes,
mm-hmm.
until the Russia was invaded. And when Germany invaded Russia, then Tito, who was the head of the Communist Party, called out the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I never let the Yugoslavs forget this, that the Communists in Yugoslavia didn't raise a bloody finger until Russia was invaded, the sacred homeland of communism.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came out and they were the great Yugoslav patriots. They were the great Russian patriots, that's what they were, and I never let them forget it. They dearly hated that when you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, well, it couldn't be for them, and all sorts of things. Oh, yeah, you make me laugh.
So they hadn't done anything. They hadn't opposed
they
the
hadn't done a
and
damn
they hadn't opposed.
Thing. But once they did,
mm-hmm.
they really, I think, spent more time against the Chetniks than they ever did against the Germans.
Mm-hmm. Well, they saw this as their opportunity, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. They wanted to be the only power in the land. And so Mihailovich was continually defending himself against these. And in the course of the long struggle, the Germans backed Mihailovich because he was dealing with, they had to fight against the Communists.
Mm-hmm.
And the British backed the Communists, which was, I think, a very unfortunate thing.
Mm-hmm. But in light of the fact that Russia was also Britain's ally, they didn't have much chance or opportunity.
Well, there's so many factors there. But as far as the poor royalists were concerned, it was a terrible stab in the back, and but the communists spent the whole damn war really
fighting them,
fighting anybody who could possibly take power after the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us used to just laugh at many of their so-called battles they fought against the Germans. They were fanciful, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
But they were violently anti-religious in every respect.
Can I ask you this? Did the Mihailovich forces exist after the war as an underground?
No.
They had been wiped out almost
totally
completely?
Totally wiped out.
And I guess anybody was left immigrated. probably to Britain or someplace like that.
Well, if they could.
If they weren't killed.
Yeah. Or they were all stamped out.
The king went to...
Yeah, well, he got out during the war.
But tell me, have you ever read a book by Evelyn Waugh? I know he's an English author. Called Sword of Honor. He was an intelligence agent in Yugoslavia during the war, and this is sort of an autobiographical novel about his stay working with the guerrillas in Yugoslavia. It's quite interesting. It's rather comical in many instances. I think you'd probably enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, Fitzroy MacLean was there, of course, in Eastern Approaches.
Mm-hmm.
I met him, of course. He was out there numerous times, capitalizing on it. But to me, Fitzroy was duped by the communists very, very, very much so.
Mm-hmm. Well, people, if they want to believe something, will allow themselves to believe it.
Well, it's unfortunate that that's so very true.
Mm-hmm.
And that Canadian Jones.
Major Jones, yes. Major Jones was, because it was about a week after I got there, a week after Ernie left, anyway. Major Jones was coming out there to visit. Now, Jones had been parachuted in to work with the partisans and was quite renowned among the Yugoslavs who knew him for his fighting valor. And it was one of the most shocking things that ever happened to me. A Crane, who was our chargé, said, "Look at Jones is coming out here." He said, under the auspices of the Yugoslavs, not the, but the embassy let, or at least Ottawa had let the embassy know he was coming.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Look, why don't you have him over here and interrogate him? You'll find out a lot from that boy, guy, you see." So I don't, I forget how I got in touch with him, but anyway, I got in touch with this guy. And he said, "Yeah, I'd be glad to come around and talk to you anytime. When do you want to see me, Sergeant?" I said, so and so. He just showed up and he had a Yugoslav colonel with him. Holy smoke, I didn't know what the hell to do.
This was an old drinking buddy of his, I take it.
No. He was strictly a security man. He never said boo the whole time he was there. So I got out the sleeve of his bottle and chatted around a while, and he said, "Now look, what was it you wanted to know? What was it you wanted to ask me, you see?" I said, "Well, really what I wanted to know from you is how can I get to understand these people?" I had all kinds of questions I was going to ask him, but I didn't dare. But Jones was, I did get out of him. He'd never left this partisan headquarters. He was always proposing some kind of raid, and couldn't he lead a raid and all that sort of thing, and they were always talking him out of it.
But he never did get to fight them.
But he never did see a shot fired in action. But he sent back some of the most fantastic reports as to, these people would say, "Oh yes, we're going to send out a raid, but we can't risk your life, you see." They'd come back and tell him what they'd done. They hadn't done anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really didn't have much in the upper story anyway.
Well, then how come he had such a good reputation with them? Because he was promoting them by sending the stories back?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was completely in their pocket. And
so he was a dupe being duped.
Oh, yeah, he was a... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
And he was a Canadian?
He was a Canadian, yeah. Set up a place called Belgrave Farms over near Welland. Wanted me to come and see him someday. He was an old fellow, really old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so much for that type of thing. Now, Press Translation Service.
Mm-hmm.
This was a pretty darn useful source of information, and I have always found it so. When I was in Ottawa the first time there in intelligence, we got the Moscow Press Translations.
From the Americans?
Usually, I think just about everywhere, it's a British-American organization that they pool,
mm-hmm.
and they jointly provide the money for running it. And they would give us the product of it, presumably free. Now, in Yugoslavia, we had it on the communist press there. In North Vietnam, I had it on the North Vietnam press.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in Ottawa, when I was back the last time, we had it on the Russians, basically.
So it was a pretty extensively run organization.
Yes, it is. And I think it's just a series of small units, but...
working in the country that they're dealing
with? Yeah. Now, the critics of it, there are a lot of critics of these things, and I put it down mainly that people are too damn lazy to read them, because there's an awful lot of reading material.
Mm-hmm.
However, they all say, oh, they're a bunch of expatriates they've got in there doing the translating who are anti-regime, and you get a very biased view of them, you see,
mm-hmm.
from them. Well, I didn't really find it that way at all.
Would you concede that things can be interpreted in different ways, and if someone wants to put the emphasis on a particular...
They could, in what they select, not in the translation of it. The translation of it, I think, is fairly factual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they're supposed to do. They don't analyze anything. But they... I didn't think they were just disaffected expatriates at all. There was an awful lot that was extremely revealing. Now, I suppose 9/10 or 95% of what is in the communist press is not worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's... decrying the West and saying how wonderfully they're doing and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't read that. The part that is really interesting is when they do their self-criticism.
Mm-hmm.
When they start coming out with criticism of how the agriculture has gone the last year and so on, you begin to get your teeth into something that's really there. Now, this is not propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to prove to the West how inefficient they are. And they're really scolding their people for having... not done what they were supposed to do. And this is where you find some extremely revealing things in their press.
Does this go on a consistent basis in every...
Well, yes. Now, where you have somebody intelligent controlling the interpretation, they probably tell these people, look, that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for the great big May Day speech that Tito's going to make.
Mm-hmm.
You could write it yourself before he made it. what we want are provided they get the right kind of guidance, you get an awful lot of useful information from them.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, I think they did give very good guidance.
Well, I should think that after a given period of time, a person who's translating would get a little bit of experience in what is good and what isn't.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, the sort of self-criticism they come in for was their industry. If a particular industry wasn't functioning satisfactorily, they would come out there quite boldly and say what the heck was wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And their agriculture is always getting going over. Education, how the universities are handling things and how they're not doing them right and sort of thing and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Party affairs are very often considered as to how... junior secretaries and so on are not doing the thing right and being criticized. Now, I never found any military information in those things at all.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't put that in there. There was, maybe I told you that one about the guy beating his wife.
No, I don't think it is.
Well, this was, they were having a blitz on trying to point out that they had democracy and wasn't a monolithic state at all. It was a democracy. And this was a great big campaign they had on at one time. And this thing came out in the press from Novosad, wasn't it? An extract of this. It said that the new emphasis on democracy is not being understood by all the people correctly. Because at this court, they had a trial of this fellow who was being tried for beating his wife. And as he was sentenced for it, and as they were taking him away in irons from the courtroom, he was heard to shout in a loud voice, "What's wrong with beating your wife? It's a democracy, isn't it?"
And they printed that?
This kind of thing would come out there. Now, towards the end, I think in from the middle of 55 on, I noticed it. Very, very strongly. I don't think there was one press translation that would come out, maybe come out 2 or 3 times a week, in which there wasn't somebody shot for economic crime.
Mm-hmm.
They had got to the stage of where people in the party were feathering their own nest, and they didn't have the kind of checks and balances that we have in our economic society, like our economic system, like audits and inspections and things like that. It was just if a communist was running it, he was going to run it right. He wasn't going to cheat and so on, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally got around to catching up with a lot of this, what they called economic crime. And it was scarcely an issue. You couldn't read somewhere in the town of so-and-so two members or one guy, manager of the factory, whatever it is, was hauled out and shot for economic crime. They were getting around to that kind of thing in a very strong way by the time we left.
Communism was working in Yugoslavia.
That's right.
Hmm.
Now, one thing, it deals with this subject in a way. In press translation, this was North Vietnam, but the press translation came out and it explained in great detail that the lower secretaries in the various enterprises and so on were given so many tasks that they couldn't possibly do them all in your 24-hour day. And a secretary in the Communist Party, if he gets, he graduates from the juniors up into it, he probably gets a job as the secretary of a commune. He'll also be the secretary of the local photographic society and about 20 dozen different other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be the secretary of all of them. And the essence of the thing is that he doesn't let any of these conflict. There's no question of somebody from the photographic society going and taking the wrong kind of pictures of what's going on in their economy and things like that. He's the mastermind who sees that all this is running along smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's getting in anybody else's hair, particularly the parties, you see. But it's like, it reminded me very much of the same thing was done, a study like this, during World War II. It was about 1942 or so. I remember seeing this in a British publication, a military publication, the infantry commander.
Mm-hmm.
And it listed in the British Army what the company commander was required to do. And it listed what: inspect the men's feet every day, attend all parades and take the attendance, you see. Had to write a letter to each man's family once a week, and so on and so on. By the time you get through, you see, these orders come down from every direction.
Mm-hmm.
The padres get somebody on the staff to issue an order saying he has to write a letter to the family.
Mm-hmm.
The medical people get their staff officer to write an order saying he has to inspect men's feet, you see. But nobody says, how many hours in the day has this poor son of a gun got?
Mm-hmm.
So he's got 30 hours worth of work in 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the study decried all this, and it said that the thing was totally wrong. And of course, what happens always,
mm-hmm,
is that the poor blinking company commander says, how do I get promoted? He sees old Joe has spent most of his time polishing up people on parade, so he says, that's what I'm going to spend my time on. And that's how the whole thing runs. They see what produces results for me, and what should I go for? Now, this same kind of a thing took place in the press in North Vietnam. It's the same damn story right from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
But they did something about it. They set up a bottleneck organization that all orders to junior secretaries had to go through this one organization before they could be saddled onto the junior secretary. Now, whether they followed it up, I don't know, but it was absolutely identical with the same kind of thing all the way through.
Yeah.
And it gave all of the problems these poor devils had at the bottom trying to do the right kind of thing, been worrying about which one he was going to be inspected on. And it was quite interesting in that respect. Well, another point is the translator I had, which I got very good support from Ottawa in the first few years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and agreed to hire a translator for me.
This was the driver that you had?
No, he was an ex-Yugoslav royalist officer.
So this is someone you brought from outside of the country in...
No, I recruited him locally.
But he was an ex-royalist?
Yes. And I never trusted him at all. I just told him what I wanted translated, and he did a good job of it.
Can I ask you how you recruited him?
Well, he told me, really, that he heard from some friend of his that the Canadian embassy was looking for a translator. Now, I don't remember who I told or anything. I guess I told our Roddy or somebody like that. I was looking for a translator. He was Roddy was our Yugoslav major domo who dealt with all the other Yugoslav staff and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably told Roddy and said, look, can you find me a translator, you see? However, this fellow heard about it and came and applied for the job. That's how he got him.
Well, what had he been during the royalist regime? Was he an official? Or
no, he was a university student. I don't think he got...
He was young.
He was quite young, you know. And I think he'd just completed university before World War II started.
Mm-hmm. But he hadn't been wiped out by the new regime?
No.
Was he an ardent communist, or was he...
Oh, no, no, he wasn't a communist at all.
And he couldn't get a job.
But as soon as they'd find out... See, you can go and apply for a job there anywhere and get it. But when they check your credentials in about a month where they find out what you are, and then you're fired. And he just kept getting fired, no matter where he went. So he realized there was no future for him, and he grabbed at this job because it was good money compared to what they were making.
Mm-hmm. Would people be allowed, I know this is off the track, but out of the country if they couldn't find a job?
No, not at all. No, no. They couldn't get out in those days.
Mm-hmm.
We had one fellow who... worked at the embassy, and he tried to get out twice, and holy smoke, they beat him up with barbed wire and all this kind of thing. Spent 2 years in jail. Oh yeah, it was terrible. And
what is the rationale of keeping people that they don't want?
Well, I don't know. It's the same all over. It's like East Germany. You can get out easier now, but all those countries, they don't want their dissidents to get out.
Mm-hmm. Reflects badly upon the country, doesn't
it? I think so. I guess that's it. We got it.
Make an example of two like that to discourage others.
Oh, yeah. Make a terrific example of anybody that tried.
He had tried to escape on a fishing boat.
Yeah.
With his wife and small son.
I kept this fellow working mainly on manuals and things like that. Not on the press at all, because there wasn't anything that I didn't already get. He worked on things like strategy, articles on strategy. I'd get him to go through these manuals and tell me what the title was.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe give me a short digest of what the article was all about. He was good at that. He was a really brilliant fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you read enough of the language, pardon me, to check up on little sections to see if he was doing the correct translation?
No, I wasn't that good at it. No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Where would you get the manuals from?
Well, these are the ones I go and get out of the bookstore. Mainly, yeah. There were articles on strategy and things like that that they published, and then there was unit organization. I got a lot about the cavalry division from one. It was a pamphlet entitled The Cavalry Division, which together with my windfall up there on the border was great. Military geography, they had a lot on that. And military history, a great deal on military history, which wasn't terribly much good at all.
Because it was a communist brand of military.
Yeah.
Mostly
now,
fictional.
I used to give him... I would only let him translate. I wouldn't let him... I wouldn't say, now look at what I'm looking for is so-and-so and so-and-so. Go through this whole manual and see if you can find such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was here, he visited me out here afterwards. He got out eventually. And he complained bitterly that I hadn't used him to his full capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't trust him. I didn't trust him to that extent. I didn't want the USS to know what I was after.
Yeah.
And I couldn't assume that he wasn't telling them everything he was doing there for me.
Would he volunteer information if he was going through a manual and say, here, I found this, is it what you want, or do you want it?
Well, he may have, but I discouraged that. I realized at the time I wasn't getting the full value out of him.
But at least you knew
he
what
had
you
more.
At least you know what you were getting was what you perhaps
were. Well, I wasn't
on.
Giving away what I
was really after.
What I was after. I had an experience in Ottawa, for example. We used to get the RCMP used to send us over the waste paper basket of the Soviet military attaché, and here he'd have the Ottawa citizen and everything that was cut out. We'd get another Ottawa citizen and see what he'd been looking at, you know. Well, that's the sort of thing you do.
Were the Russians that lax that they would let their garbage cans be? I mean, they didn't have machines or burning shredding.
No, that was Well, it was just a slip in your car.
Well, no wonder Guzenko was able to get out as easy as he did.
Well, another question are these defectors. That they came out, as I said, mainly, well, from 45 on, there was really a steady flow of them
mm-hmm.
from the Yugoslav army. And in order to break down the racial antagonism that existed, they would post people from one part of the country to another part to do their service. So they were all being cross-posted
mm-hmm.
with the idea that they'd learn something about how other people in the country lived. And very often it was people from the south who were posted up then to Slovenia, where they had a chance to get out through the mountains and something like that. They saw the total difference in Slovenia, which is a much higher standard of living than anywhere else in the country.
Is this the area that's just below Austria?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And people wear lederhosen and all that up there the way they always did. And so they would become totally disaffected with having to go back to their village again.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions were very bad anyway. And a lot of them would just say, oh, the heck with it, I'm going to walk out the way they go.
And it was that easy, they could just walk across the border.
It didn't seem to be any great problem. The border wasn't all that well protected, I don't think.
Well, I've heard that near Klagenfurt, for example,
yeah.
there was, you could swim the lake, and or row the lake, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose probably could.
Yeah, so on one side of the lake is Austria, the other side is Yugoslavia.
Yeah, it wasn't all that tight up there, because a lot of them got out. Well, now, there was some order of battle that came out of their interrogations. I get copies of the reports from Trieste and Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
And by individuals, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had more industry work, when they'd been working as a laborer or something like that on more industry. And
you mean soldiers serving the army would often serve as laborers in...
Well, workers. Sometimes they did, but other times they were just plain laborers who'd worked on war industry.
Mm-hmm.
Who were getting out, and I wouldn't say this was, this wasn't thousands of people or anything like that. This is maybe one or two a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I say a steady flow. It was.
And they would all tend to be peasant background, and they wouldn't be of the officer class.
There wasn't any high-level group.
So the information they would have would be
very
compressed.
Very elementary. Now, I indexed all this. I went over all I could find available.
Mm-hmm.
From what had been gone before I was there, and I indexed it all by location, by the role that this fellow was in, whether it was army or war industry and so on, and the date.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept all those by an ACARD index system.
Were you able to find if units moved around a great deal, or did they move around a lot in Yugoslavia?
Not from that.